This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars from a certain point of view.
Ramus, by Gary Whitta. What is it they've sent us? Captain Ramus Antilles watched as Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan turned away from him, holding the data card he had handed to her. The data card for which almost the entire military might of the Rebel Alliance, both on the ground and in orbit above the planet Scarif, had just risked everything to steal it from one of the most secure Imperial strongholds in the galaxy. The grand all-or-nothing gambit had led to the single largest combat engagement in the long history of conflict between the Rebellion and the Empire, and one that, despite heavy losses, had resulted seemingly in a victory. The card, and whatever highly prized data it held, had been delivered safely into the hands of one of the Alliance's most capable covert operatives. The rest was up to her. "Hope," she replied as she looked ahead through the forward viewport of the Tantive IV's cockpit to the limitless ocean of stars beyond. "Always so damn enigmatic," thought Ramus. "Leia never told you more than you needed to know. That was for the protection of others as much as her own. She had learned that lesson well. The princess who had become a galactic senator. The senator who had secretly risked her life countless times to help nurture a fledgling rebellion from a handful of squabbling, disgruntled star systems into the organized and dedicated alliance it had become. Still no direct match for the awesome war power of the Empire, but enough to capture their most closely guarded secrets in a mission that even Ramus thought breathless in its audacity. Enough, maybe just enough, to give the oppressed peoples of the galaxy a fighting chance at freedom. Ramus watched the stars outside stretch into a kaleidoscopic tunnel of light as the ship jumped into hyperspace. Then Leia turned back to him, and they both stepped through the cockpit door into the hallway. "Will we make it?" she asked. Before departure, Ramus had warned her that her ship was not yet capable of even the routine flight to Tatooine, which had until recently been its assignment. It had not been even able to travel to Scarif under its own power, carried instead in the belly of the Rebel flagship Profundity as mechanical crews worked hurriedly to repair its overworked and malfunctioning hyperdrive. By the time they arrived at Scarif, Ramus was able only to assure her that the Tantive IV could perform a hyperspace jump, not that it could sustain light-speed travel long enough to reliably get them to any given destination. "I'll be able to give you a better answer in operations," he told her. "Then let's go," she said, leading the way. Ramus followed, forced to quicken his step in order to keep pace with her. They arrived at the ship's operations center to find several senior officers working frantically at their control stations.
"Status," Ramus requested as the door slid closed behind him. "We're maintaining light speed for now," the nearest officer informed him. "Remains to be seen how long the engines can keep this up. Maintenance crews are doing all they can. If we can hold this speed, we'll be at Tatooine within the hour. But the drive's still in bad shape. Motivator could go at any time."
Ramus nodded. All this he knew. After the damage sustained on its last mission, the Tantive IV was in no shape for a desperate flight from the Empire. For years, he had carefully steered this ship, his ship, through countless Imperial blockades and checkpoints, always able to avoid detection or suspicion.
But now, it had been spotted fleeing the scene of the most daring military assault in the history of the rebellion, carrying stolen goods that the Empire would go to any lengths to recover. Suddenly, the Tantive IV was the most wanted ship in the galaxy, and it was in sorry shape. For the task of ferrying the most critical Imperial secrets ever captured, they could scarcely have picked a worse vessel at a worse time. But that was the hand they had been dealt, and Ramus had no option now but to play it as best he could.
"The real problem is what we're leaving behind us," the officer continued. "We can't exactly run quiet with a hyperdrive that's barely holding together. If the Empire detected any trace of an abnormal hyperspace wake when we jumped to lightspeed, it won't take them long to use it to track us."
Ramus sighed. He had dreaded this possibility, and had warned Leia of it prior to their setting their escape course from Scarif. Typically, a jump to hyperspace meant a clean getaway. A ship's lightspeed trajectory impossible to track. But the Tantive IV's impaired hyperdrive was like a leaky oil pan, leaving behind it a residual energy signature that was unique and traceable. He wondered now how long it would take the Empire, with all their resources no doubt already diverted to finding them, to pick up their trail and follow it. For that reason, Leia had thought it too great a risk to return to the Rebel headquarters at Yavin 4. Faced with no good options, she had ordered Ramus to instead set course for Tatooine, their planned destination before the hurried redirection to Scarif. She hoped still to fulfill the vital mission that her father had entrusted to her earlier that same day, knowing that even if the Empire pursued them to that barren desert outworld, they would find nothing there but endless wastes of sand. Ramus saw the grim expression on the face of the ship's bosun, who was examining new readouts at his station.
"Don't tell me it gets worse," he said. "The Profundity took heavy damage when she was disabled," the bosun reported. "Her electrical systems overloaded, and since we're still docked, the overload fried half our grid too. We barely have deflectors or weapons. If it comes to a fight, we won't be able to put up much of one."
So there it was. Surely only a matter of time before the Empire found them, and little chance of defending themselves once they did. Ramus tried to think of a time during all their many high-risk missions and close escapes when they had faced a situation as dire as this, and came up wanting.
"What about the escape pods?" he asked.
"As you ordered," said Helfen Rum, the Tantive IV's stalwart second officer. "All secured and ready to launch."
Ramus noticed Leia looking at him inquisitively.
"Your Highness, if we are stopped and boarded by the Empire, my first priority is to get you to safety," he told her. "At that point, the pods may be our only option."
"Surely it will not come to that," said Korla Mitone, Tantive IV's chief petty officer and a long-serving retainer of the Organa royal household. "We're still flying under a diplomatic flag. The Empire would not dare board us."
Ramus considered that. Technically, it still held true. The Tantive IV was officially a consular ship that Leia used in the performance of her duties as Alderaan's representative in the Galactic Senate. As a diplomat, she enjoyed special legal protections that meant not even the Imperial military could board, search, or in any way impede the free passage of her ship without her express permission. It was a broad and very convenient privilege that in the past had allowed her and Ramus to conduct acts of espionage and subterfuge right under the Empire's nose. But now Ramus found himself doubting, given the apparent import of what had been stolen from Scarif, that it would be enough to protect them this time.
"This just came in,"
the bosun reported, looking up from his station.
"The Empire has issued a priority red directive. Any ships matching the description of a CR-90 Corvette ought to be stopped and held. Priority red means all previous orders and duties are immediately superseded for all Imperial ships galaxy-wide."
"I've never seen this much comm traffic.
The Empire's flooding every frequency with it. Whatever Rogue One beamed us from Scarif, they really want it back.
All eyes were on Leia, as the full gravity of the situation began to sink in. Ramus had seen this look on her face before. She was concerned, worried even, but it showed in a way that only those few who knew her best, had served with her longest, could detect. To all else, she projected only firm resolve in the face of crushing adversity. But he knew how bad this latest news was. The ship's fragile consular status aside, one of their few slim hopes lay in the fact that the CR-90 was a ship common throughout the galaxy. Literally thousands of them in service, and the Tantive IV looked like almost any of them. But though they were a needle in a haystack, the Empire had the resources, and apparently the determination, to tear the entire haystack apart in order to find them. And diplomatic protocol would not stand in their way. Briefly, his thoughts turned to the innocent crews of other Corellian corvettes that even now were being stopped and invaded by armed Imperial boarding parties. Some would be foolish enough to resist.
If the Empire does find us.
Toshma Jefkin, the Tantive IV's second officer, pondered aloud.
Then let's make sure that they don't, said Leia.
Ramus looked at Jefkin. He had served with the man for years, shared many close encounters with Imperial forces, and knew that little rattled him. He looked rattled now. His face was a ghostly white, his hands were clammy, and he seemed to be gazing into nothing, the haunted countenance of a man who has seen something that can never be unseen.
Tosh, what is it?
Ramus asked. Jefkin looked at him with hollow eyes.
That thing in the hallway while we were trying to get off the profundity. It killed at least a dozen of my men, cut them down like they were nothing. Blasters had no effect. It just kept on coming, kept on killing. It was like a nightmare. I've never seen anything like it. Like some kind of death angel.
Ramus and Leia exchanged a grim look as they realized what this must mean. To retrieve what had been stolen from them, the Empire had dispatched none other than Darth Vader himself. And that was the most dire news of all. Ramus returned to his quarters to write while he still had time. As captain, he knew that he would go down with his ship if necessary, but in case it came to that, he would first dispatch a final message to his family back home. He had already thought it through. As his crew piled into the Tantive IV's escape pods to escape Imperial capture, he would hand someone he trusted an encrypted data cylinder with instructions that it be delivered to his wife on Alderaan. As he sat down to write, that grim scenario seemed more likely to him than any other. He'd had a bad feeling about this mission from the beginning. Hastily improvised, orders rewritten at the last minute, and now here they were, barreling headlong in a broken ship toward the edge of the galaxy, carrying the last best hope for the survival of the rebellion and the entire Empire searching for them. He would write three letters, one for his beloved wife, the other two for her to give to each of their young daughters when they were old enough to understand. He had so much he wanted to tell them. More than anything, he wanted them to know that even though they would grow up never knowing their father, it was not for the lack of his love for them. No, it was because he loved them so, because he was determined they have the life they deserved, and he had given everything to help secure it for them. That was the most bitter irony of war. The greatest acts of love for your family were the ones that kept you apart from them. He tried to write, but no words came. He knew what he wanted to say, but not how to say it, and the longer he stared at the screen, the more agonizing the prospect of composing his final words to those he most loved became. To his wife, he wanted to say he was sorry for all that she had been asked to give so that he might serve his princess and her rebellion.
often leaving her to raise their children alone for weeks and months at a time. He had barely seen either of his daughters since they were born. As greatly as that pained him, the sacrifice had always seemed worth it to Ramus, inspired as he had been by Leia's own passion to fight for a future in which not just his children, but sons and daughters throughout the galaxy could grow up free from Imperial tyranny, something they only read about in history texts. And Leia, who had come to trust and rely upon Ramus like few others save her own father, had insisted on ensuring that his family was well provided for during his time by her side. But that all seemed like cold comfort now, as he reflected on how much precious time had been lost, and how little he might now have left as the Empire tightened its noose around his ship. It was only when he had finally begun to write that the ship lurched aftward hard, almost throwing him from his chair. He recognized it instantly. The sudden, violent deceleration when a ship dropped out of light speed unexpectedly. Looking to his viewport, he saw the tunnel of shimmering blue light outside dissolve away, replaced by an inky void punctuated with pinpoints of light. The Tantive IV was no longer in hyperspace, but back among the stars. Exposed, easily detected by any Imperial ship that might be in the area, which would certainly be looking for any vessel matching their description. He sprang from his chair and bolted toward the door, leaving the letters unwritten. "What happened?" Ramus asked as he entered the cockpit. "Motivator finally gave out," the ship's pilot reported. The instrument panel before him and his co-pilot was ablaze with blinking warning lights. "We're at sublight for the rest of the way. Where are we?" The co-pilot worked the nav console, punched up a local sensor image. "We're close. About a quarter parsec out." Ramus stepped forward, directly behind the two helmsmates, so that he might see better through the cockpit viewport. And there it was. Barely discernible to an untrained eye, but Ramus knew what he was looking for. From this far out, Tatooine was little more than a speck. Just a tiny, pale orange dot adjacent to two far larger, brilliant lights, the planet's binary suns. How long at best speed? They were so close, yet still so far. If the hyperdrive had held out for just a few moments longer, they would already be in the planet's orbit. But now, forced to hobble the rest of the way at sublight?
8 minutes,
the pilot responded.
"I think we'll make it."
There was hope in the man's voice, a sense of relief, the first Ramus had heard from anyone since their narrow escape from Scarif. And now he felt it too. 8 minutes. If they could hold out just that much longer, he could get everybody to the surface and scuttle the ship, then procure another, unmarked and untraceable, at one of the planet's infamously no-questions-asked spaceports, with which to spirit the princess to safety. For a brief moment, he allowed hope back in. Considered the possibility that maybe, just maybe, there was a way out of this. That the princess might still be safe after all. That the stolen data might still find its way back to Rebel Command. That he and his loved ones might still... The impact rocked the ship so hard it slammed Ramus against the cockpit bulkhead. Like a passing breeze, his reverie vanished as quickly as it had come, and a shrill cockpit alarm sounded.
"Star Destroyer!"
the pilot exclaimed in response to the new sensor reading that had just appeared directly behind them.
"They're firing on us! Man the turbo lasers and return fire!"
Ramus ordered.
"Put everything we've got into the aft deflector shield and get us to that planet!"
He assembled his security forces and gave them their orders, sending every man he could arm to the forward docking hatch to set up a defensive bulwark. He knew their chances of repelling an Imperial boarding party with the meager forces at his command were slim, but they might at least buy him time to get the civilians away to safety. As his troops departed, the ship was rocked hard again, and a loud explosion sounded somewhere far behind Ramus. His comlink crackled to life,
and he raised it to hear the sounds of chaos and panicked voices from the cockpit.
Sir! That last hit overloaded our shield projector! We had to shut down the main reactor before it blew! We can't maintain distance on that destroyer! It's closing fast!
Distance to Tatooine?
0.27!
Came the reply. They would not get away, Ramus knew, but the escape pod still could. Ramus heard a muffled metallic echo all around him, the sound of the ship's hull groaning under outward pressure, and knew what that meant. The destroyer had locked onto them with its tractor beam and was pulling them in.
Sir, they just...
I know.
Get to your escape pods.
And he ran, searching desperately for the princess. The ship was lost, he knew. But he could still save her. He could find her nowhere. He rushed through the hallway, searching, as all around him, his crew helped the princess's senatorial staff pile hurriedly into escape pods. There weren't enough for everyone, he knew. As it had always been with the rebellion, they had to make the best of what little they had, and good people would have to die. He heard the distant explosion, knew that it had come from the forward airlock, then the sound of a furious exchange of blaster fire. Imperial troops are now coming aboard his ship. Not much time. Have to find her. He had not dedicated so much of his life to protecting her, only to fail now, in her most critical hour of need. Finally, he spotted her as he rounded a corner. She was at the far end of the white-walled hallway. Alone, save for an R2 unit, warbling affirmatively as she spoke to it.
Your Highness!
When Leia turned to see him, she quickly ushered the droid away. Puzzled, Ramus raced to follow her, catching up to her as she slipped through a bulkhead doorway into a shadowy side corridor.
You must come with me! I have to get you to a pod! He implored.
I'm not leaving, she said.
Get as many as you can to safety.
Ramus knew by the defiant tenor of her voice that there would be no arguing with her.
The transmission from Scarif!
Leave that to me, she said, a purposeful glint in her eye. Behind her, the R2 unit leaped at her urgently. The sounds of blaster fire were getting closer now, and less frequent, as the Imperial borders depleted the Tantive IV's meager defensive force. Mere moments remained.
Your Highness!
You have your orders, Captain. And my gratitude for everything. Leia raised her hand and touched it to Ramus's cheek, giving him a warm, bittersweet smile, both of affection and of sorrow. Both of them knew that this was the last time they would ever see each other. And then she was gone, the little droid trundling away into the shadows after her. There was little left for him to do. His ship captured and swarming with Imperial stormtroopers, all but a few escape pods already away. All that remained was to end his life the way that he had always lived it. Fighting. He rushed away down the hall, ducking behind a bulkhead as he saw the first stormtrooper around the corner up ahead, firing. Ramus took aim and returned fire, dropping that stormtrooper and then another. Then the number of troopers who were arriving, taking positions, firing at him, quickly became too many, and his only recourse was to run. He sprinted away, knowing that he was quickly running out of ship, but determined nonetheless to make the Empire expend every possible resource, every ounce of sweat, every precious second, before they would inevitably take him. Maybe just enough to buy his princess time to execute whatever last-ditch plan she might have. He was almost at the hallway junction leading back to his quarters, when he was tackled and brought to the ground, three Imperial troopers forcing him into submission. He struggled, resisting them to the last, until a rifle stuck to the side of his head, dazed him, took his strength.
This one's the captain!
He heard the trooper's modulated voice behind his right ear as his arms were pulled behind his back.
We need him alive!
And then he was up again, his vision a hazy blur as he felt himself being hauled forward, his boots dragging along the floor behind him.
"My lord,"
he heard the trooper's voice behind him again.
"The captain."
Ramus felt a shadow looming over him a moment, before something cold and metallic, like the jaws of a vise, clamped hard around his throat. As his eyes widened, he realized the black shape that now towered over him, though little more than a dark blur, was Darth Vader, and that the mechanical grip around his throat was a hand. The stormtroopers moved to surround them both, as though a Sith Lord needed any assistance whatsoever.
"The Death Star plans are not in the main computer,"
an arriving trooper reported.
"So that's what they sent us."
Even in his disoriented state, Ramus now understood why the Rebel fleet had gambled everything to steal that data, and why the Empire had dispatched its most fearsome, unstoppable asset in its attempt to recover it. That hideous spherical leviathan that he had seen lay waste to the surface of Scarif, unimaginable in size, unthinkable in purpose. The Emperor's monstrous attempt to secure ultimate dominion over a galaxy, slowly finding the will to oppose him. The secrets to destroying it were in the hands of his princess, and he would gladly die to protect them.
"Where are those transmissions you intercepted?"
Vader demanded.
"What have you done with those plans?"
Ramus fought uselessly to pry the fingers from around his neck, felt his feet leave the floor as Vader lifted him effortlessly, all the while tightening his grip, choking the life from him.
"We intercepted no transmissions!"
he spluttered, fighting for breath.
"This is a consular ship! We're on a diplomatic mission!"
"If this is a consular ship..."
Ramus only vaguely heard as he began to lose consciousness, his vision dimming around its edges.
"Where is the ambassador?"
Even as Ramus felt the last of his life ebbing away, he found himself strangely hopeful once more. He knew, of course, that his story had reached its end, that he would never again see his beloved wife and children on Alderaan. And yet, still he had hope. He hoped that somehow Leia knew of a way out even from this. Hoped that the glimmer in her eye he had seen in that hallway was the germ of an idea that might yet see the stolen data returned safely to the Rebellion. He hoped that it would empower them to destroy that hateful weapon, to turn the tide of war, to rally more systems to their cause, to allow a galaxy once again to breathe free. In his final moment, he hoped.
The Bucket by Christy Golden. TK-4601 was disproportionately grateful for the stormtrooper helmet. For one thing, it smashed down the unruly tuft of blonde hair that would never obey a comb or brush. The one that made him look like he was 13... His fair skin reddened and paled easily, too, which meant that no matter how diligent he was in schooling his expressions, his coloring always betrayed him. With the helmet on, though, and with the device that rendered the voices of stormtroopers almost completely identical, his reactions, good or bad, were much harder for others to determine. He was particularly appreciative of it today, as he was grinning like an idiot. He couldn't believe his first assignment, straight out of the academy, had been aboard an Imperial Star Destroyer. And not just any Star Destroyer, either. TK-4601, also known as Tarvin Lorica, served on the Devastator, the flagship of Lord Vader himself. He was now part of Vader's personal legion, Vader's Fist. A junior member, to be sure, but he was still an official member. Today, a thrill of excitement laced the activity of the finely tuned military instrument that was Vader's Fist. If Lord Vader himself, He of the black gleaming armor, the ominous breaths, the deep resonant voice, and the unfathomable command over objects and people. If he wanted to give chase to this vessel as it sped away from the Battle of Scarif, then as far as TK-4601 was concerned, the rumors had more of truth than fiction about them. Behind the bucket, as the helm was sometimes called, no one could see his brow furrowed in concentration, his blue eyes narrowed. No one could see the joy he took in a successful mission with no casualties either, nor when he was reluctant to follow orders that sometimes seemed to border on senseless cruelty. He was getting better at pushing that part down, though. Earlier, TK-4601 had stood rigidly at attention, while Vader, standing a mere meter away at the most, had grasped Captain Antilles of the Tantive IV by the throat, lifted him off the ground, and interrogated him.
"Where are those transmissions you intercepted?"
Vader had boomed, in that sonorous yet dreadful voice that death itself might use.
"What have you done with those plans?"
"We intercepted new transmissions! This is a consular ship! We're on a diplomatic mission!"
The Tantive IV belonged to the House of Organa of Alderaan. TK-4601 knew that both father and daughter of that house were members of the Imperial Senate.
"If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?"
As seemed to be a not uncommon progression with Lord Vader, he'd grown so furious that his fingers crushed the man's windpipe before the unfortunate captain could even manage an answer. TK-4601 could hear the vertebrae snapping like dried twigs. He swallowed hard. The bucket concealed all. Vader had ordered Commander TK-9091 to search the ship. "Tear it apart," were his exact words, until the plans were found. As for passengers, unlike the late Captain Antilles, they were to be taken alive. And so, the four stormtroopers had been sent to search for the ill-fated ship's passengers. They were now poking around in various corridors, closets, and other out-of-the-way places in a life-and-death game of hide-and-seek. TK-4601's heart was still racing, and he could feel the heat in his cheeks and the smile on his face. He deliberately pushed the casual murder of the captain out of his mind, and now he was beyond excited. He felt exultant. They were not just conducting random raids on sullen populations of distant worlds. They were in search of the real thing. Real rebels, with real cunning, who'd managed to steal plans from a major Imperial base that ought to have been impregnable. "Clever creatures, the rebels," he thought. He would never admit it, but there was much to be admired about them. Rumor, that sweet, swirling, shape-shifting creature, had it that the missing ambassador was senatorial royalty. Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan, to be specific. It was a logical conclusion, considering the Tantive IV was owned by her father. Both she and Bail Organa had publicly expressed sympathy for the rebels' cause. That didn't mean they were themselves rebels, of course. But what if they were? TK-4601 badly wanted to talk to TK-3338, who was following immediately behind him in their sweep, and ask if he thought it was true. What was she like, this senatorial princess? She couldn't really be just 19, could she? Younger than he was, and already a senator. Astonishing. It wouldn't be surprising if she had indeed been seduced by the siren song of the rebellion. Its championing of the innocent. Its defiance of the order offered by the Empire. He'd been 19 once, too, and remembered the appeal such ideals could have. But he'd been smart, and resisted that call. He was a staunch Imperial. An emperor outranked a princess, and the Senate's days were numbered.
"Think we'll find any of them?"
asked TK-4247, who was bringing up the rear. He was even newer and more naive than TK-4601 had been when he'd joined Vader's Legion.
Lord Vader will be pleased with us if we do,
TK-9091 answered. He didn't say the opposite, that Lord Vader would be displeased if they did not. TK-4601 didn't even want to think about that.
I want them alive,
Vader had said. Their blasters were set on kill. They were in a battlefield even now. Too many of the crew were loose and armed, wandering about and opening fire for the stormtroopers to take chances. TK-9091, taking point, as was his right, had ordered them to kill the crew, but switched to stun upon sighting anyone who might be a passenger.
What if we find the senator?
Chimed in TK-3338.
Same thing, stun. But we don't know for certain that she's here,
the commander answered.
Don't let down your guard. If this really is a rebel ship, they're cornered animals now, and they're going to fight dirty.
Of course they would. Lying through their teeth about their illegal activities, hiding in shadows. Dirty fighters. But after the quick flush of excitement and anticipation, the routine of checking corridor after corridor faded before the mundanity of the task. And then, all at once, mundanity was shattered.
There's one,
TK-9091 said, turning to TK-4601.
Set for stun.
TK-4601 instantly adjusted his blaster setting and turned to look. The instant lasted less than a heartbeat, but TK-4601 felt it was frozen, locked in time. Her clothing was so white as to almost glow. Her skin smooth and pale as cream. As pale as his own, though her long, glossy hair, gathered up in elaborate but efficient twin buns on either side of her face, was a rich, warm brown, not the bright, sunny yellow of his. And she was so little. TK-4601 had imagined that rebel women would be strong and muscular, tall, powerful warriors. This one stood barely a meter and a half and looked like she might break if held too tightly. But her eyes, they were not cold, those brown orbs. They were steady, however, and they were calm. And they told him as clearly as if she had shouted the words, "I will never yield." She gripped a small handheld blaster, the barrel pointing up. And suddenly, TK-4601 understood how it was that this 19-year-old girl was more of a woman than most twice her age. He understood how she had become a popular senator, why she had sympathy for the rebellion, why people followed her. And in that instant that lasted for an eternity, he also knew that they, elite members of Vader's Fist, were going to be too slow. That their commander had, very wrongly, judged this woman harmless, had reacted far too casually, and was about to pay the price before any of them could react. The white sleeves fell away from her slender arms as she lifted the blaster. TK-9091 fell, his armor scorched and smoking. The movement shocked TK-4601 out of his reverie. Time, which had slowed to a crawl, sped up again, rushed to meet him, and he fired his own blaster directly at the woman who could only be Princess Leia Organa. She collapsed instantly, striking the cold gray surface hard with no chance to break her fall. She lay sprawled, her tiny, delicate fingers still clutching the blaster. TK-4601 rushed toward her, suddenly seized with worry that she had hit too hard, that she was dead. He felt a strong, and he knew, treasonous wave of relief when he realized this was not the case.
She'll be all right,
he said. He realized that his words were heavy with unexpected, unwanted emotion. But thanks to the bucket, they came out sounding as clipped and precise as they always did. He took a breath.
Inform Lord Vader we have a prisoner.
It presaged dark things, if Vader specifically wanted to interrogate this one. He himself had encountered his commander only a few times, and that was enough. What he would do to her... No, he would not be swayed by a pretty face and a mien filled with resolve. The princess would have been delighted if her shot had dispatched TK-9091, or himself, or the other two in the patrol group.
Sir!
TK-4247 said to him.
The commander's dead.
Dead? It wasn't possible. The white plastoid suits protected the soldiers encased inside them, diffusing blasts so that most shots weren't lethal. But the princess had aimed true, and from only 3 meters away. TK-4247 was bent over him, and now he turned his helmeted face to his new commander.
Order, sir?
Sir. With the death of TK-9091, the role of commanding officer fell to TK-4601. He'd wanted to climb high in the ranks, but not like this. For a moment, he didn't reply. He knew the orders. Stormtroopers lay where they fell until after the battle, and TK-9091 could be no exception to that rule. TK-4601 could still hear the screams out in the corridors, both the high-pitched sounds of blasters firing and the cries of agony from their victims. He strode to where their captive lay. Her body was limp and her face slack. Its fire was quelled, but its beauty still lingered. She would wake in a few minutes, perhaps feeling slightly hungover from the effects of the stun bolt, but, as he had told the group, fine. Unlike TK-9091, his commanding officer, his friend, the one who cracked the stupidest jokes in the world in his off hours, but who was all business when he donned the uniform. Except this time, he'd underestimated the enemy. A stupid, stupid mistake. The prisoner stirred now, groggy, moaning softly. True to her rebel spirit, though, the first thing she did was start to raise the pistol. TK-4601 kicked it away angrily. She gazed up at him, blinking rapidly as her eyes slowly focused. At the sight of his face, his helmet, an expression of disgust flitted across her face. That beautiful visage was as much a face of the enemy as any scarred, bearded one. Leia Organa was a killer. She looked at them and did not see the people, only the Empire they served. To her, Tarvin Larika had no name, no face, only a number. He was nothing more than a uniform of the hated foe, to be shot at and eliminated as quickly as possible. He reached down and grabbed her wrists, hauling her to her feet. The princess struggled, but TK-3338 pressed the blaster into her back. She stiffened and stilled.
Lord Vader wants to see you, Senator Organa,
TK-4601 said. He snapped a pair of stun cuffs around her slender wrists.
You can either come along with us on your own 2 feet, or we'll stun you again and bring you to him that way. Your decision.
For a moment, he thought she would lunge at him. Instead, she composed herself. I'll walk, she said. Her voice held no quiver at all. It was as cool and regal as the rest of her. But TK-4601 thought of Vader's abilities, and the torture droid. And he suddenly, abruptly, did not want to be the one who delivered her to the utter lack of mercy she would receive at Darth Vader's hands. To the ominous whir of the hovering torture droid and its myriad drugs with which to torment the prisoners. He said on his comm,
This is TK-4601. TK-9091 is down. We have a prisoner in custody. Request 2 additional troops to escort prisoner to Lord Vader per his instructions.
Copy, TK-4601. We see your position. TK-7624 and TK-8332 are en route.
The other two looked at each other, then at him.
Sir?
He ignored them and continued speaking into the comm.
Request permission to transfer to active duty unit for the duration of the battle.
Permission granted. Nothing official, but I've got a hunch we'll be sending some troopers to the surface if Vader doesn't find what he wants here. No stone unturned. Lot of sand there, though.
Copy that.
TK-4601 said immediately.
Transfer me to that unit if it's deployed.
Leia Organa's eyes narrowed as she regarded him speculatively. Doubtless his team was startled and wondering what the hell he was doing. He was a member of Vader's Fist. He could be here fighting, killing the rebels, doing what they had trained for. And instead, he'd requested what amounted to a demotion? They'd be even more shocked if they knew what he was thinking. TK-4601 loved the Empire. He believed in it. He knew it could bring order and peace to the galaxy. But he also knew that he couldn't keep doing what he was doing now. Killing rebels, while looking into their faces, their eyes, seeing them opened and exposed, emotions naked to him, while they only saw flat black and white. He could still kill them, but only when the battlefield was even. Only when he couldn't see them. As he saw this senator, this princess, this rebel. He could shoot them out of the sky, and he would, but not shoot them in the heart. The two new stormtroopers arrived. TK-9091 was left where he fell, per orders. He'd have understood. The four escorted the princess to meet the Dark Lord, each of them towering above her diminutive height. As TK-4601 watched them go, the princess turned to look at him searchingly. Spontaneously, without thinking, he removed the helmet. The princess seemed startled to see him. A human male, not much older than she, fair-haired, blue-eyed, his cheeks flushed. Their gazes locked for a moment. Then she gave him a slight nod and turned around. TK-4601 didn't kid himself that she understood the gesture or that they had made any kind of connection. But damn it. He reminded her that there was a person inside the plastoid armor. And more important, he'd reminded himself.
The Sith of Datawork by Ken Liu.
Psst, Arvira, I need your help.
I looked up from the tiny text scrolling by on my screen. Behind the stacks of tablets teetering on my desk appeared the anxious face of Bolvan, Gunnery Captain. I'm kind of in the middle of something here, I said, gesturing vaguely at the tablets full of data work. Interruptions were part of my job, but surely he could see I needed a chance to catch up. Everyone thought being Fleet Logistics Liaison, Grade 4, on an Imperial Star Destroyer was a cushy job. But it took a lot of data work to keep the crew of a massive ship like this fed and clothed and in fighting shape. Desk jobs in the Imperial Navy were no less stressful than combat ones.
Please, I really need you, he persisted.
I sighed. Officers were just like babies. When they needed something, it was always the most important thing in the world. I haven't forgotten the entertainment holos you wanted, but I have to prioritize processing the captured corvette Tantive IV, especially since Lord Vader...
No, it's something else.
I paused the scrolling screen. It was clear he wasn't going to leave me to my work until I took care of his problem. I tried to put on my most convincing smile. How can I help you? He glanced back into the corridor to be sure it was empty, closed the door to my office, and sat down.
It's like this.
I sat there patiently until he finished his tale. So you ordered Hija not to shoot the escape pod? I asked, just to be sure I understood.
Right.
And why not? Wait, is it because you wanted to avoid the data work? I wasn't joking. Like all militaries, the Imperial Navy ran on data work. Most officers spent more time filling out forms and filing reports than shooting at rebels. Per Imperial Naval Regulation 132.CAT.CH22, shooting an escape pod, other than during an armed engagement with an intensity classified as above Category 5, required the gunnery captain to file a form XTM-51-CT to explain why the action was necessary. This was to avoid giving those squawking senators an excuse to claim that the Imperial Navy engaged in war crimes. Bolvan had always tried to get by with as little data work as possible. He shook his head no. Well, this was interesting. Are we trying to conserve lasers now? He ignored my sarcasm, but his face turned red.
The sensors detected no life forms aboard. I thought, we wouldn't have been scored with a kill, so...
Of course. Now his actions made perfect sense. Annoyed with rebel propaganda that showed Imperials to be poor shots, frankly, the stormtroopers could do with more targeting drills, fleet bureaucrats had issued a new policy that tied gunnery officers' promotions to their kill ratios. Shots fired at unoccupied escape pods would indeed be considered wasted. I thought this was a terrible idea at the time. The new policy would encourage some ambitious gunners to aim for rebel pilots in disabled vessels rather than dangerous armed drones. But the brass never asked for my opinion. Fine, so you let the empty escape pod go. What's the problem?
Lord Vader ordered the Tantive IV to be torn apart until the secret plans stolen by the rebels were found. But now that they've gone over every centimeter of the ship, Commander Praji still hasn't located the plans. I'm afraid...
Ah, I understood. I take it the escape pod didn't just drift into space?
No,
he said.
It followed a trajectory to the surface of Tatooine. I just thought it was a malfunction at the time, but maybe that wasn't it. What if the plans were aboard?
This is indeed a tricky problem, I said thoughtfully. I'd always liked Bolvan. He never made too many outrageous demands on the logistics corps, and he was a terrible card player, which meant that I usually managed to win extra credits from him in private games among the officers. I didn't want to see the poor man court-martialed for negligence if the plans were somehow aboard that escape pod. Even worse, Lord Vader often didn't even bother with a court-martial. It must be nice to be able to ignore data work requirements whenever one pleased.
That's why I came to you, he said, his voice pleading. I figured if anyone knew how to patch up a problem like this, you would.
Now, not to be boastful, but I did have a reputation for expertise in data work. I knew the ins and outs of the hundreds of thousands of ever-changing forms and questionnaires and applications and data grids and charts and reports and requisition communiques that kept the Imperial Navy humming. I knew just what checkboxes to tick to get my ship priority service in docks, what keywords to stick into blank forms to avoid a surprise inspection, and the secrets for requisitioning entertainment holos even when all the shipboard bandwidth was supposed to be reserved for combat-related transmissions. And I shared my wisdom liberally. Junior officers who wanted to avoid snoring roommates came to me for advice on the XPTS-7 bunking application. Claim a propensity for sleepwalking and punching sources of noise. Senior officers who wanted to maximize their shore leave came to me for help with the SS-VAC-2B visa. Pick a departure port on the other side of the vacation planet from the arrival port. And even the captain came to me when it was time to fill out the estimated operating budget. The trick? Ha! As if I'm going to share that trick here. Some called me a data work wizard, or maybe even a data work Jedi. Oh, never mind that. The point is, I liked helping people, and if they chose to thank me with little favors or gifts or credits, it would have been impolite to say no. Oh, all right. Let me just come out and say it. It was nice to have people in your debt. With the political situation as volatile as it was, you never knew when you'd need to call in a favor. By helping people today, I was just helping myself for the future.
A good data work master needed to have strings out to as many puppets, I meant students, as possible. It was prudent.
After thinking over Bolvan's problem for a moment, I had an idea. I handed him a tablet. Here, start filling this out.
What is this?
Bolvan looked wary. That's a form INS-776-TX.
What does it do?
Don't you even bother reading the instructions? Oh, all right, I'll explain. That's the form you use to request an immediate, mid-cruise, extravehicular armament inspection.
Why would I want to do that? That's going to send all the gunners in EV suits to inspect every single one of the Devastator's guns. It will take hours to complete.
I shook my head in mild annoyance. It was really hard sometimes working with people who had no understanding of the subtleties of data work. As the gunnery captain, you are one of the few officers on board with enough authority to request such an action, and Imperial regulations require the chief gunnery officer to be in charge of the inspection. Hija will be occupied for the rest of the day climbing from gun embankment to gun embankment outside the Devastator. Bolvan still looked confused.
He's going to hate me. He never wants to go outside. Says it gives him space sickness.
If he's outside, I said, then Lord Vader isn't going to corner him in a hallway and ask about any escape pods. He's the only other witness. Bolvan's eyes widened with understanding.
Oh. Oh! What do I put down for reason for requesting inspection?
Reports of non-responsive triggering mechanism. Bolvan's fingers danced over the tablet.
I take it this is to lay the groundwork for later claiming that the guns wouldn't respond? Clever.
This is just going to buy you a little time, I said. It doesn't solve the whole problem. He looked up, alarmed.
So what else do I do?
You fill out a form DKS-77-MAN. I flicked the form over onto his datapad. Bolvan looked at me with his helpless, watery eyes. I relented. That's the form used to request the detailed manifest of any non-military vessel. In this case, since you'll be asking for the manifest of the Tantive IV, a consular ship on her last departure, you'll need to add in Appendix P2, Declaration of Classified Military Need.
What am I supposed to do with the Tantive IV's manifest?
I flicked over yet another form onto his tablet. You fill out application SUG-171-TI. He looked about ready to collapse in the face of this mounting pile of data work.
Which is?
Don't you pay any attention to the training holos? You filled out an acknowledgement stating that you watched a holo on this family of forms just 2 days ago. Bolvan's confused expression told me that he probably signed the acknowledgement without reading it just to get it off his desk. The SUG-171-TI is used to dispatch an operational suggestion to another officer. It's used when you need to bypass the chain of command and there's no military emergency. Fleet Command is very proud of this innovation in improving the initiatives of all officers. He acted like he wanted to tear his hair out, but he managed to force himself to calm down.
Who am I making the suggestion to, and what do I suggest?
Commander Praji, like you, hates data work. You just told me that he has gone over every centimeter of the Tantive IV, but I bet you he hasn't documented his search. I know. When Lord Vader is breathing down your neck, the last thing you want to do is more data work. But trust me, if the plans aren't found, everyone is going to want to make sure their behind is properly covered. That's why you want to make a suggestion to Praji to get his troops to fill out multiple copies of Form SRS-98-COMP, Inventory of Captured Vessel.
But if the plans are on that escape pod, how is documenting the rest of the ship helpful?
I knew then exactly how my teacher felt back when I was a kid, and I just couldn't see the point of showing my work on tests. Even data work wizards had shameful moments like that. I had to be patient with him. The point, Bolvan, is to let Praji be the one to figure out that the missing plans might be on that escape pod without exposing your own role in its escape. So you have him do the careful inventory,